There are so many people there living in hotels who can't go back to work because their job was taken from them by the storm.
The tens of thousands of fires that have been burning so far this month mark at least a 10-year high.
I couldn't get a hold of my parents, hadn't talked to my mom in over an hour. Their house phone is completely dead.
Right after Hurricane Maria, the tourism industry in Puerto Rico was actually completely shut down.
I have not experienced anything quite like this as an adult.
It looked like Armageddon. We literally had to drive through the wall of flames just to get out.
We hear a lot about natural disasters these days. Everything from fires to hurricanes can lead to billions of dollars in damages for communities across the United States. In 2019, weather and climate disasters resulted in billions of dollars worth of losses. But indigenous communities tend to get far less aid from the federal government than states do. That's according to a new analysis by the Center for Public Integrity and High Country News. While U.S. citizens on average receive $26 per person from the federal government, tribal citizens only get about $3 per person per year. And because of fewer resources and unemployment, tribal nations are more vulnerable than the U.S. overall when a natural disaster strikes. I spoke to Allison Herrera, a member of the Xolan-Tzilinin tribe from the central coast of California and a freelance reporter for High Country News.
Over the last decade, there were 70 natural disasters that occurred on tribal lands. And we also found that, you know, from data from the National Congress of American Indians, those citizens that live on tribal lands are more vulnerable overall than U.S. citizens because of factors of like unemployment and income. And we also found that U.S. citizens receive $26 per person per year from the federal government, while tribal citizens receive approximately $3 per person. So that's one of the gaps that we found when it comes to disaster aid, looking at tribal communities versus a community that is in a state that is not a tribal community.
And let's give some examples, specific examples of reservations that have been hit hard by natural disasters in recent years.
One is the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation. In the last 10 years, they had four natural disasters. They had severe storms, straight line winds, flooding, and fires. In 2015, 255,000 acres of their land were burned. That's approximately 20% of the tribe's land base. And some of their housing was wiped out during that period of time, yet they were ineligible for individual assistance to help rebuild those homes. And those homes were rebuilt with some help from the neighboring Tulalip tribe. Another thing that happened in 2018, they had severe flooding that caused nearly $500,000 in damage.
So we know that there are reservations that have been hit pretty hard by natural disasters. How does it compare when you're in a tribal community requesting funding from the federal government to what someone outside of a tribal community would do to request funding from the federal government when it comes to FEMA, for example?
The process is, by all accounts, similar, except that tribes have to have this thing called disaster mitigation plan. States also have to have that plan. But the difference is that, you know, those plans, they have to meet certain requirements, but it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of specialized personnel. The process to approve contractors to put together this plan takes a long time because tribal governments run differently. And also, sometimes they don't have the staff to put that together. Sometimes they don't have the money to be able to hire those contractors. They can get a grant from FEMA to do that, but then again, that's another process. FEMA leaders that I have talked with in the community, like Nelson Andrews Jr., who's the emergency management for the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe, said it's just kind of a separate but unequal system.
I mean, it's very unequal given the dollar amounts that you've cited at the top of the piece. Like, why is there such a difference in how much tribes tend to get on average than folks who are not living on tribal lands?
You know, tribal communities are smaller compared to, you know, citizens that live in, you know, the state of Minnesota or the state of North Dakota. But at the same time, that's per capita. I mean, that is such a smaller amount. I think the problem that I've heard from leaders is just the process by which funding is obtained. For instance, I cited the fact that you have to front the costs. So a tribe has to pay for that $500,000 in damage. And FEMA doesn't only, they reimburse up to 70%. The tribe has to pay for the other 30 out of pocket. And so that 70% that you get reimbursed for, like in the example of Colville, in that 2018 flooding, they're still waiting on the reimbursement. And that is because some of the paperwork was not coded properly. And that goes to staffing issues. I mean, so a state has a department that can, their whole job is dedicated to coding that paperwork, making sure that it's accurate, while a tribal community, a tribal government, they have to shift people around. They don't have that one person that does that. And so that creates a lot of delay. So it's that process, and it's also just having that hazard mitigation plan. Right now, out of the 573 federally recognized tribes, according to Nelson Andrews Jr., who's the emergency management person for what Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, only 30% of tribes have a disaster mitigation plan. And that leaves you really vulnerable and very, very exposed.
So what can tribes do, or are tribes trying to do anything to change that?
I know that next year at the National Congress of American Indians is going to be lobbying for an increase in funding for disaster aid. They want $20 million more annually in additional funding for tribal grants for the next 5 years to help tribes assist on that technical level when we're talking about the paperwork. We're not talking about people that are to train people to know how to do that, train people on how to do that. And I think that comes with some lobbying and just some awareness on the part of, you know, the needs that tribes have.
Allison Herrera is a member of the Jolan Salinan tribe from the Central Coast of California and a freelance reporter for High Country News. Thanks so much, Allison.
Thank you so much, Tanzina.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.